In the time of King Herod, after Jesus was born in Bethlehem, Magi came from the east to Jerusalem. To further set this scene, I've asked Jonathan to cue up Hector Berlioz's interpretation of the mood in Jerusalem on that night of the Magi's audience with King Herod. It's from the opening of the Marche Nocturne, from the oratorio L'Enfance du Christ, the Childhood of Christ. And we're just going to hear a snippet of it. Jonathan, nothing's coming through.
It's very quiet. You might have to turn the sound way up. I'll try it again, though.
Was that the whole thing?
Nope, we're not done yet. I'll try it one more time. Can you hear it now? Okay, going to begin again. Everybody turn your sound way up. Y'all hear the strings and such that come in at the end there? Yes? Yeah. So it's just very quiet. Yeah.
It is very quiet. And I encourage you to go find it on YouTube. What impresses me about the beginning of that is that there's this cadence and it's fugal and it builds and it's in the imagination of Berlioz, it's the sound of soldiers circling the courtyard of the king, armed and ready to repel the slightest threat. It's the cadence of that requires the embodied projection of deadly force, day in and day out, night after night. Now, one could imagine that after nearly 40 years of rule over Judea, Herod the Great might enjoy some measure of security, a sense of ease, but for a Jewish king who rules at the tenuous pleasure of a Roman emperor, there is no breathing room, day or night, no rest. For his personal security detail, it has been recorded that Herod had 2,000 soldiers at his disposal. He also deployed spies throughout Jerusalem to circulate and sniff out even the slightest whiff of resistance. The default setting in and around Herod was, at any given time, fear. So in that regard, there was nothing unusual in the air on that particular night. In the time of King Herod, after Jesus was born in Bethlehem, Magi came from the east, came to Jerusalem. Magi from the east, who were they exactly? There are so many theories. Being from the east probably means ancient Persia, modern day Iran. And they were not Jews. They were not in the business of watching and waiting for the birth of the Messiah, who would be the son of David. They were not Jews, they were Gentiles. And Magi. Magi, it's a designation that is more job description than assessment of special intellect or perspicacity. Magi were those whose day jobs were performed at night. Professionally speaking, they did make it their business to watch the night sky and take note of anything unusual. So in that way, the Magi were a bit like radio astronomers today. Did you catch the article in the New York Times? It was a few days ago and had the headline, "Was that a dropped call from ET?" According to the news report, it was usual for certain astronomers of the Breakthrough Listen Project monitoring space from Australia to spot strange blasts of radio waves. But when the radio waves that were received last April and May came through, they seemed to be originating from the neighborhood of Proxima Centauri, which is the closest star to our sun, the closest known star, and a mere 4.25 light years away. Follow-up was demanded. And in 2021, or that was 2020 actually, follow-up by radio astronomers means that there is data to be studied and there are papers to be written. The time of the infancy of Jesus, for astronomers from the East, follow-up literally meant following on foot while looking up. In the time of King Herod, after Jesus was born in Bethlehem, Magi from the East came to Jerusalem asking, "Where is the child who has been born king of the Jews? For we have observed his star at its rising." What is striking me this year about the opening of the Epiphany Gospel is how banal, how ordinary and predictable much of it is. A ruler's paranoia ignites and weaponizes, and in the manner of all power that depends upon fear. The deceit and even the extreme violence that follows is according to an old pattern, as old and probably older than Pharaoh's decision to eliminate the male children of the Hebrew slaves at birth. No threats tolerated. Yet even as kings do, what kings do, and the vulnerable quake with terror, and as soldiers follow orders, they remain ordinary people who, like the astronomers, are doing their jobs. The astronomers did their jobs by scanning the heavens. Most of us attend to whatever is on our vocational field of vision one way or another, and many of us today, that means on screens with Zoom. But at any rate, it is into that field of our vocational vision that God, the Emmanuel, comes, the word that cannot be drowned out by the static of fear. A persistent word with a light that reveals that there is an alternative path by which to travel. Don't forget, this is the gospel according to the writer we know as Matthew, for whom Epiphany isn't just one story for one day in the church year. God Emmanuel, God with us, is a story of one epiphany after another from start to finish and beyond. Matthew chapter 1, verse 1. See there, tucked into the usual genealogy of men who father sons, who father sons, who father sons, who father sons. There are four women who pop up, four mothers, four female epiphanies, and three of them are Jewish. Matthew 1, verse 20. As Joseph does what a human must, sleep. A messenger comes to call in the stupor of that sleep to steer him away from the usual path that a man with an improbably pregnant fiance would follow. The messenger angel not only gives Joseph an alternative path, the angel gives that path a name, Emmanuel, the God with us way. So the gospel according to Matthew begins and will end. See, I am with you always to the end of the age. That's just about all I want to lift up this morning. When and where God is with us, epiphanies are to be expected. Epiphanies, small e, that are revelations that happen suddenly and without extraordinary fanfare and shine just enough light for us to see that there is an alternative to business as usual. I'm wondering, the more that the church started capitalizing E in Epiphany and making it a feast and requiring costumes, crowns, cantatas, and kettle drums, the greater the danger of losing the intimacy of the Emmanuel factor that promises that God comes in the ordinary of human flesh to the ordinariness of human life. And don't get me wrong, I love costumes, crowns, cantatas, and kettle drums, and I treasure the hope that next year we will unwrap the fancy boxes that represent the royal gifts of frankincense, gold, and myrrh, and place them in the hands of children gowned in robes that are covered with glitter that got transferred during storage underneath angel wings. Still now, even as the Herods of this world will never find their rest, we may rest assured in the Epiphany promise that into our mundane fields of vision, on any given ordinary day, God comes. To lift our sight lines beyond the confines of the frame, calling us to follow up, calling us not to just think outside the box, live outside the box, as magi have in every age, calling us to take another route, the way on which light that scatters darkness shines. One step at a time, the way of love that knows no power of separation. And it is that Epiphany love that we now sing. Bright and glorious is the sky, 301 in the ELW.